Okay, this is Keith Bearden at Texas Tech University and Vice President of Phi Beta Mu International. And we're on the line with Colonel John Bourgeois, the famous Marine Band conductor, teacher, educator, and we're doing an interview with him as the outstanding bandmaster of Phi Beta Mu. Colonel Bourgeois, good day, and how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you, Keith. Thank you for calling.
Yes, well, we're doing this for our young bandmasters coming out into the profession so they can learn from the masters, and you're certainly one of all times. So let's just get started. How did you get started in band when you were a youngster?
Well, let's see. I was a country boy, lived in a very, very small town, and I guess I'm the product of the music man syndrome. A traveling guy came to town, and I think I was probably about third grade, and I started on the tonette, and then I think clarinet, and then eventually cornet in that same, all within that same small period. And then I moved across the river. This was on the west side of the Mississippi in Gibson, Louisiana. And I moved on the other side of the river where there's probably more civilization. And I went to a small parochial school that had no music program, but the priest there sent me over to the high school, public high school, which was next door, and I was taking lessons there. And eventually moved into a suburb of New Orleans in Metairie. And lo and behold, I met my music man again, Mr. Campbell, and participated in these little parades and that were usually around the carnival season. And then I went to Jesuit High School, where I really got my, I think, real start in terms of finding what I wanted to be as a career. Had a wonderful band director, Mr. Castigliola, who the most contemporary music he might have played might be something from Leroy Anderson, but almost everything he did were the overtures and transcriptions, and so that, of course, founded my basic love for overtures. And I started in the cornet, and then I became a French horn player, and went through high school, and then I went to the Loyola University, also in New Orleans, as a major in French horn, and I had some incredible teachers. Several had become the Myron Bloom, who became principal horn in Cleveland. Bob Elworthy, also, who was a protege of what's our friend in Indiana. And then also I ran into some wonderful conductors. Hillsberg was conducting the orchestra, and I would volunteer, and I got to hear Toscanini conducting the NBC orchestra. The Metropolitan Opera came through. I also worked as a backstage conductor while I was at Loyola, and just increased my love of music and exposure to music. And also a great pianist at the university was Isvan Nadash, who was a student of Béla Bartók. And he, again, just gave me great inspirations as to this lovely and wonderful world of music. And I also had, as a band director there, George Jansen, who, by the way, in later years, he was the original teacher of Wynton Marsalis. So we've we have great connections there. And then in 1956, I was going to be drafted, but I opted and went into the Marine Corps. And after basic training and infantry training, I was in a band that no longer exists. I hope that I didn't have anything to do with it. But it was at in San Francisco on Treasure Island. And it was like a show band. It was about a 45-piece band. And we played all over California because about almost every other city at that time had been the capital of California. And then that was 1956. In 57, I won audition to the Marine Band in Washington. And I went to Washington in 1958 as a horn player and then on the arranging staff. I was staff of which consisted of one arranger and myself. And then eventually the second arranger that came in was Sammy Nestico. I had to work with Sammy. And then I stopped Horn and went into a sort of an involvement of an operations section. We didn't have a section of operations, and so I started that and was the White House liaison for entertainment and extra music that to back up the entertainers. And that was in around 1969. And then in 1974, I was selected as an assistant director. By that time, I was a master gunnery sergeant, which is the top enlisted rank. And I guess the only indignity I didn't have was that I was appointed to as a first lieutenant. I avoided being a second lieutenant. And then that was 1974. An assistant director, and then on the retirement of Jack Klein, and I became director in 1979.
Okay, let's stop right there. So,
sure.
When you went to Loyola and graduated, or came out of Loyola, you had plans to teach, and you were sidetracked by the war, correct?
Well, I guess I was going to either teach or perform. I obviously was going to be involved and wanted to be involved in music.
Okay.
And but I, as I say, I had to do my service. And but I guess upon just not only being but hearing the Marine Band, I found a niche that I just had to be involved with. It's, you know,
wow.
When you, it's, I think, like so many of our colleagues, when you hear the Marine Band, you've died and gone to heaven.
Yes. Well, it was a wonderful track that you laid down on the way to being the conductor of the Marine Band. That was that's a really great story. So let's just talk about military bands, the changes
right.
You've seen through the years when you first came to the Marine Band.
Well, actually, you know, I've only been very much involved in the Washington area, where, of course, we have all of the premier bands. And I've seen the evolution of several things. So the same thing when I was in the band in 74, that's when women first came into the service. And it wasn't that there was a prohibition against them, but that was also the highlight of the women's movement. And so with the that time, Ruth Johnson, horn player, Beth Idle, oboist, a piccolo player, were the first women. And they have been a constant source, and I think an improvement in the overall performance of musical performance since that time. Many have retired, and many have been principal players of their sections. So the you know, I always use the analogy in hearing auditions. It's sort of like grading pearls. Will this pearl that you're hearing fit on the rest of that string, and either compliment it, embellish it, or will it work out as such? Because these are all very wonderful players. They're all basically professional players, and they come into the band with you know, blind auditions, very much as an orchestra behind screens, and that's how the audition process goes, and that has improved the quality, I think, of the players, and that goes for all of the bands.
Absolutely. Well, I think our audience would love to hear some of your thoughts about being the conductor of the Marine Band and some of the exciting things you've got to do through the years and some of those highlights and funny things, whatever you'd like to share with us. I think we'd enjoy.
Well, you know, the thing of it is that it's very difficult to find just one thing, because almost sometimes you're going to say almost daily you're a witness to history, especially if it be inaugurals, state funerals. I was fortunate to take the band out the first time out of the country, and I guess the first time was into the Netherlands, to Norway, and then a historic trip into the Soviet Union in the last days of the Soviet Union in 1990, and we did a concert tour of about 18 days. And just to hear both the response and the feeling of foreign audiences that might have, you know, sort of other ideas about, you know, militarism and the U.S. But, you know, I use the cliche that perhaps we did what Napoleon was never capable of doing in Russia. We conquered Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been very many touching things. I recall when during the Reagan first inaugural, I was standing on the platform conducting, and Michael Ryan was to sing the America the Beautiful. Well, all of a sudden, I have this big monitor in front of me that not only is going on with the actual ceremony and cues, but also live action event. And as Michael is singing America the Beautiful, the clouds open and this brilliant sun came through, and the monitor flashed in front of me that the Iranian hostages had been released. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very touching moment. Many things. The Kennedy funeral was something that we will all remember. And as I say, you can't really point one day, because it could be something that's happening that you're a witness to history.
And could you believe that here you were, a little boy growing up in a small town in Louisiana, could be standing in Washington, D.C., with the most powerful people in the world conducting the Marine Band?
Yeah.
What was that feeling like?
Well, it's, you wonder, like, truly, you couldn't, had you wished all your life for something, I felt that in a way, had I wished it, I really had a dream come true, because it was just very, I still reflect on it, and I feel very privileged to have been a part of that.
Do you have a favorite composition through the years?
I guess when you got on basics, I remember once I was on Desert Island Disc and asked to name what I my program. Well, as a wind player, I think you have to say the Mozart Grand Partita ranks as number one. But then there's other music. I mean, I love overtures, and any Verdi overture would fit into that category. Kiri Takano was singing Dove Sono. Any Sousa march, and obviously a lot of great music that is being written for the continuous for wind band. I've had the privilege of working with several of our wonderful composers, and the band movement is I think growing beautifully and well, and composers are recognizing and have an understanding for wind writing, which they probably didn't have earlier. But of course, my other principle is that we may have a lot of new music, but we're neglecting a lot of old music.
Thank you for saying that.
I mean,
it has to be a balance.
There really is. And also, to chide some of my colleagues, transcription is not a dirty word. It's a matter of how it's transcribed. Unfortunately, many of the things that we know came from the old transcriptions, and they were basically made for outdoor performance. I think we can keep the validity of transcribing for the concert hall by not as many 2D doublings and what have you, but and listening and keeping it more in the manner that the composer. But I love transcriptions. Remember that Wagner approved of the Seidel transcriptions. Brahms only wished that he could have had transcriptions. He just made remarks about him. Berlioz heard Franz Jung played by Weyprecht's band and marveled at it. So there's a great legitimacy for transcriptions.
Oh, so those are actually really positive changes you've seen through the years with the new composers.
Yes, right.
And transcriptions. Are there any negative things that you see in the concert band movement that you warn or caution about?
Well, it seems that at times we get onto gimmicks a bit too much, I think, like more woodblock or cowbell, as they say. But I think one time I made a tirade about making the instrument, pushing the instruments beyond their abilities, and excruciatingly out of range, and then the mandatory drum corps riff, and then back to other nonsense. But no, there's a lot of wonderful writers that are going on now.
Yes. During your early years, and you mentioned some, who were some of the old masters that you admired and looked up to in your early days of becoming a young band commander?
Oh, well, for instance, well, obviously, Bill Ravelli. I became friends with the master. And both he and also became very close friends with Mark Hinesley, Harry Beechin, and Jay Julian, whom we just lost recently, who became a great personal friend and colleague. And I guess, you know, we're all sort of getting long in the tooth to a degree, but I still feel as young as I was from the first day I went into the band when I hear it.
And still conducting every day, probably, or every week.
Well, I need a vacation for retirement.
I hear you. So we have a lot of young directors, hopefully, in the audience listening to these recordings, and they'll be in infamy. What piece of advice or tidbit would you like to share with new directors just beginning their careers as a director or a performer?
Well, one thing that we seem to have pretty much, they have, which we really didn't have, and I think it's helped but also hinders a bit, is that they won't play anything unless they have a recording of it. And that's a little too easy. You've got to go back to do your studies, your score studies, use your own judgment, but not playing a piece because you haven't heard it really is something that we've got to, I think, get rid of in a way. And especially now, a lot of publishers are having problems always recording everything. That's one of the things. I rely on my own innate musicality.
Yes.
Before I have to hear something.
It's not bad to listen to a recording, but you want to develop your own interpretation.
Right. Indeed.
Yeah. So.
Go ahead. Well, the thing is that listening always is great listening, but also I find many pieces that I want to either transcribe or edit by having heard a performance, not necessarily, you know, going out and getting one to study for it, but that's a part of research. One of the most valuable tools that a young band director or orchestra director today could have is the internet. You can find both performances and research and libraries and what have you. I'm a great fan of a library.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that, as a band director, you want to develop and research, collecting programs, other people's programs. And for instance, you say, oh my goodness, they're playing this piece on this program, and that goes great with this, et cetera, et cetera. Developing programs, theme programs, but it does require a certain amount of both study, and that's your homework.
With the amount of with the technology and the amount of information out there, students coming into the field these days are very, very fortunate compared to
right.
Where most
and even YouTube is a great asset.
Yes,
I went on the other day looking for something. Well. Checking on something, and I find that all of a sudden I'm finding all of my old recordings, someone has been downloading them track by track, and so I feel like I'm Taylor Swift.
Much more important than Taylor Swift. Okay, so in closing, we're going to Midwest. We'll see you up there. And what, just at your age and your point in your profession, what are you going to do at Midwest?
Well, I'm going to see a lot of people. I'm going to try to go around looking for music and having a good time, because
never stops, does it?
Yeah, we're all in the same crusade.
As Paula Crowder says, you're in the struggle, right?
Right.
And yeah, it never ends. I mean, you're always interested in new music, performances, clinics, whatever's there.
And you also named one of my favorite people of all people, one of the greatest teachers I've ever known, and that's Paula Kreider. She is an amazing, amazing person and a great friend and a great musician, but especially a great teacher.
She was our outstanding bandmaster last year.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you, Colonel. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to seeing you at Midwest as always. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Keith, and I'll see you at Midwest.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.